keynote from Tim Bray this morning, and he demanded to have Open Office integrated into systems like blogging, wikis, and all this stuff. And I actually want to show you the technologies and the ways you can actually do it. And so I'm looking forward to see wonderful filters, wonderful plugins for Open Office to enable this collaboration. So, but before I start with this XML stuff, I just want to give you my point of view of localization from a back. I can. So hello. I just want to give you my point of view to localization or to the problem of different languages, and I want you to show the bug of the week if you're interested. And just very short, to show you, we get a lot of bug documents from different languages. The funny ones are the Chinese, where the bug doc simply says, oh, there's something wrong, so we can't figure it out. And there was one bug in the RTF filter, which is RTF is something like you have this keyword, RTF, then you have some kind of text, and another text, and then it stops. And in the middle, I put in a special character, insert special character. I think it was this one. I'm not actually sure, but I think it was this one. And when you imported it, the import would stop here, right now, right before this character. Only the first text is imported. And it only appears with this character. And it took a long time to figure out what went wrong. So I give you a hint what went wrong. So you have this Unicode character for stored. It's a character. It's stored in the variable u. And then you have some kind of code which looks like this. You have this u cast to a character and then do some stuff. So is anybody here who can say, help me fix this bug? Why it stops with this character? Yeah? Yeah. Right. Here's the typecast at the wrong site. So beware of cast. This is my annotation for the bug of the week. So what actually happens is, and this is the very speciality about this character, when you cast this character, this Unicode character, to an 8-bit character, which means removing the upper 8 bits, it is simply a closing bracket. So this is what the filter reads and it stops. So this is my view to localization. Okay, so now I want to start with my talk about the XML interfaces in the writer. And to give you a short agenda, I divided this talk into three parts. The first part is I want to talk about filter. With filter, I mean importing and exporting some kind of data. The second part is about the integration of the writer in service-oriented architectures. And there's one important technology available in OpenOffice 2.0, which is XForms. And the third part is I would like to have some kind of birds of a feather session with you about further ideas. I have some further ideas, and perhaps we can have a discussion about your thoughts and what might happen. So just start with the filter part. So we have a very simple mechanism of writing own filters, which are XSLT-based filter. XSLT is a simple scripting language which allows you to transform XML document in another XML document. So you can write transformation between XML documents. And you can specify a script for loading, a script for saving. And I just want to show you the importance of the filters. And there are a huge amount of possible scenarios where we can use it. So one is what Tim Bray mentioned, the RSS feed. You can edit your RSS in OpenOffice by, when you import it, convert RSS to Open Document, edit it, and on saving, convert Open Document back to RSS. So what I want to show you now is how you do it with this Apache Forest project. I just want to show you. It's a content delivery system, and I want you to get an idea how XML is used, what XML means, and what you can do with it, and what the distinction between layout and logic is. So far as when you download it, you just start it, and it will start a web server and give you a little preview page, so it just has to compile it. It will come up with the server right now. Just have to wait. So now it's there. And we can start it. And I will. So it's running on localhost on port 888, I think. Yes. Oh, it was wrong. So it's this one. So it reloads. So, I will show you that it's the original one. So this is Apache Forest project, and what it does is you have an XML file where your content is stored. You have a bunch of XSLT script which does this layout thing, and then it will, it's presented in different ways. And when you look at these source document, I want to show it to you. Oh, this is for later. It's this one. And there's this index file. And I just want to put it in my Emacs. Perhaps it's a little bit, can everybody read it, or should I enhance it? So what you have here is, so now I think I have both on the page. So you see, you have a very abstract description. You have a header, and in the header, there's a title. And you can find the title back here. So you have the raw content in an XML file and a bunch of scripts with layouts. And when you change it, and you, for example, change the title, Hello XML here, save it, and push the reload button, it will change it immediately. So this is the idea of XML. You have distinction between content and layout, and all you do is you have editors who will edit the content, the XML files, and you have a graphic specialist who will write the XSLT scripts. And what you can even do is you can generate a different view when you have a PDA, so you don't do this menu bar at the left, so because you have not so much space. Or even you can generate PDF of it. So I just choose this one, open it in a new window, and you see it's a PDF document generated of it. So it's the same with RSS. It's the same idea. You have an abstract description, and you do have dynamically generated documents from it. So, and now the question is, how to edit this XML content? And the answer today is to use Emacs, VI, or something like that. So, how can we use OpenOffice? How can we use OpenOffice Writer to edit these files? What I want you to show now is how you can do it using the XSLT scripts. And before we can go into details there, we must need a simple excursus about the flat open document format. So everybody of you knows these ODT files. It's a zip file, and in the zip file, there are different streams. You have the content stream, the style stream, and all this stuff. But when you want to transform this document using an XSLT script, you must have a flat version of it. Everything needs to go into one XML file, into one XML stream. And this is what we call flat open document format. It's just a different representation, but the same content. And the easiest way to to see this flat open document is to write an ident XSLT, an XSLT script which simply copies the content as it is. And here is it. It's the very simple XSLT script. It's just, it matches the root and copies the root. So it just copies the source document to the target document. So there's no transformation done. And when you use this script and you plug it in the writer, and what you have to do is you have to go to tools and you have these XML filter settings. By the way, who knows about these XML filter settings? Okay, so there are some. And oops. Okay, it's already open. That's the problem. Here's it. So you can plug in a new component. You just have to choose a name for the filter. I call it flat XML. You have to choose the application. It's the style writer. You can enter a name, a filter type, and you can enter a file extension. And in the second tab, the interesting part is here. So here's this ident XSLT and for import, and also this ident.xslt for export. So now let's see what this document looks like. So you go to test XSLT and say transform the current document. Now the first time it takes a little bit longer because Java needs to be started and the XSLT filter will come up, and here's what you see. So this is flat XML. It's the whole document, the whole open document in one big XML file. So it starts with the OpenOffice start tag, and at the end you see, at the end you see here these three paragraphs which describe the text. You can find it there. So this is the excursus about flat XML. So once you have this flat XML filter installed, you can play with it. You can see how the information is mapped into Open Document. This is much faster than reading the XML specification. So the first thing you do is write an ident XSLT, make you such a filter, and now you can play with it. So now when you show you, so are there any questions regarding this? Yes. No, it's not included. But it's not included. enter the script, yes.
Is it on the website or
it will be. I promise. Okay. Yeah, it's that easy. You take this ident XSLT, create your filter, and then you can simply go to this file, say file, save as, wait for the dialog come up, and then you choose this flat filter, and now you can send it. Okay. So let's have a closer look at this content file from this Apache Forest. And it's this one. I'll just make it a little bit bigger. So you see, you have this document, you have this header, you have the body, you have a section, title, paragraphs, and all those things. And what you need to do is to come up with a mapping. How do you map a paragraph into Open Document? Paragraph, very easy, just a paragraph. How do you map a section? You can use sections. How do you map the title? You can use the metadata title. And once you come up with this, And so here's the simple content file. It's a document, it has a header, welcome to my project, and it has a section which has a title, congratulations, and then you have a simple content. So the idea is how to transform it. You convert this header title into an Office metadata title. So this is the title of the document title. You convert sections to open document sections, and the name of the section, you use the ID, and all the stuff. You can convert paragraphs to open document paragraphs, and there's some speciality. You convert this code tag to a span, which means a sort of text with a style named code applied to it. And this is actually very, very easy to do. So here are the files. Here's this loading. It's not much. And there's this saving, exporting. It's not much. And once you have done that, you can open it and just have to find it. Source file, it's content xdocs index. Now it will open it, transform it, and here you see the information. The information of this content XML transformed into an open document so you can edit it. And so, in case you wonder where the title has gone, you can go to the properties, and you have your title here, and you can edit it. So now, the creation of the content, it's much simpler. You just type in hello. Oh, it's just one O, is it? Yeah. Save it. You can if you check this, the message will not appear. Just say it might be something lost. That's right. And then you go to your page and say, "Okay, reload it, please." And then you say, "Hello, Cobra." So I want everybody now start writing this XSLT filters for RSS, for this forest, and for your own markup. Yeah. So any questions on that? Any further questions? No, the flat XML file filter is just to play with the flat XML file format. So what you do is you have to transform flat XML into your own XML content on export, and on import you have to convert this, for example, forest XML content into flat XML. So flat XML is just the whole document in one XML. Everything in one XML document, yes.
What tools are usually used to do the transformations?
Okay, you can... Yeah, you can use this, this dialog here. I think you can transform the current document, you can browse the current document, and when you modify the XSLT script, it will choose the latest one, the actual one.
So I asked you what are you using for the XSLT?
Okay. Yeah, there are different tools, so Emacs. Yeah. Yeah. I can show you. If you have an embedded image, it's simply a base 64 encoded. So when I put in an image here, insert some kind of where picture. Okay, here's an image, and then you transform it into flat XML, current document. You see, here's the picture. It's base64 encoded, so everything is in, really. It is no loss of any data. Okay, so XSLT scripts are perfect for the transformation from one XML into another XML document. So what about wiki? The wiki text syntax is not XML based. It is some proprietary format. And you can't use XSLT. By the way, some of my colleagues are saying you can because XSLT is Turing complete and you can find a way, but I would not try that. So you can't use XSLT. And what we have there is another interface, and it's very simple. When you just download the SDK for the API, and there's a sample filter in there. It's the edent filter written in C++ or written in Java, whatever you prefer. And from this, you can start building your own wiki filter. And all you have to do is, on import, and I try to illustrate it as with this header, you only have to parse the text and generate events for the text. So for this three equal signs, you generate a start element, or here's a typo, it should say text H for header. So sorry. You start at the header, then you send the character, and then you stop, finish the element, and on export you do it the other way around. So on every start element, you output the three dashes, then you output the content, and then output the three dashes followed by a new line. So I will not go into detail this. We will not have the time here, but it is possible to write perfectly filter for the wiki text. Just use the API, use this edent.xslt, and all you have to do is generate the XML events so that it will generate a flat XML which represents this wiki, and on saving you transfer format back. Yes? Yeah. So you wrote such a filter already? Okay. yeah, that's right. So you can use OpenOffice even for this non-XML old file formats to convert it to write filters and give you all these cool features of an Opus. Of an Office suite, like this correction of the language, like searching, like, yeah, it depends on how good you write your filter. You can even write some WYSIWYG things, yeah. And difference between what? Yeah. No, there's no difference. It's just an XSLT engine, yes. Okay. So this was the first part about writing filters. And I think this perfectly matches with this what Tim Bray said this morning of you don't want to write your blogs, write your wikis, write your forest content files with Emacs or VI. You want to use OpenOffice, and you can use these filters to dynamically create content. It only depends on this XSLT scripts. So the second part is now about service-oriented architectures. And it depends about how much you already know about service-oriented architecture, or how much do you want to know? May I just ask who knows about service-oriented architectures? Okay, so it's not so many. So I try to express my idea, my understanding of service-oriented architectures just before. So service-oriented architecture is a different level of abstractions to other architectures. It's technically, it is built upon web services, and web services can be seen very roughly as XML-based remote procedure calls. So you have a service is maybe a web server, which accepts a request encoded as XML, and gives a response also encoded as XML. So you just have XML-based remote procedure calls. You have languages like WSDL to describe the request and response format of the messages, and you have tools like J2EE, JaxP, and all this stuff to generate or to deploy such web services. So just for this, just think of XML-based remote procedure calls, and the important thing is a different level of abstraction. Philosophically, you see, you're on the level of services, which is very, very high level. You're on the level of business level, and an example I use to illustrate later on is a vacation service. So imagine a company needs to approve the vacation request from some of their employees, and what you have is a service where you can make requests. I want to be on vacation, start at, end at. And this vacation service then will handle the workflow, will send an email to the appropriate manager to approve it, to disapprove it, to check whether you have enough holiday days left on your account and all this stuff. So this is a typical service provided in a service-oriented architecture. And the idea of doing it with XML and not with HTML is the following. When you have a classic web application, you have your data, you have your server, and you have an HTML interface. So when you have a vacation service, it might be some formula, you enter your data, click on the submit button, it goes to the web server, the web server will check it, and write your request to a database. The problem with this kind of architecture is the collaboration. Because you have an HTML interface, and HTML is not processable by computers. It's just language. It may be German language, it may be English language, Slovenian languages, but it's not processable by computers. So when you want to create a processing chain, then you have to do it manually. So in this case of this vacation service, perhaps think about that. You all employees agree to, or it's a management decision that one certain day everybody is on vacation. So perhaps between Christmas and New Year, it may be. So what you have to do is everybody has to enter this vacation locally using this HTML interface. So you cannot use a simple program, another service to access this vacation service. So maybe the vacation service is a bad example. So think of what SHP does with the NetWeaver infrastructure. NetWeaver is simple, every service of a business unit accessible. So there's this financial direction which provides access to the builds of customer X. There's this another web service available where you can request all orders of this customer. And then you can write an application which requests this data and generates a new view of it or provides a new service. So the idea is you remove or replace HTML by XML, and thus you allow automatic processing chains. And this works pretty well. It works pretty well. You have this whistle, it can be automatically generated, and for the last 3 or 5 years, I think these companies and the research community understood how to do it. It's really very popular, and yeah, for example, when you look at SHP, who replaced their system completely with a web service, service-oriented architecture, which they call NetWeaver, you see the power of it. Every company moves to it. But the problem they have is the following. Now we come back to this service-oriented architecture, to this vacation service. So there's a vacation web service, and yet, no, suppose you want to go on vacation. It's very easy. You just have to provide a simple XML document, encode your data, and then send this XML request to the web server. You can use Netcat or Telnet or whatever you like. Maybe the server speaks SOAP, then you have to do a little wrapping, but it's easy, isn't it? No, it isn't. So you can perfectly build automatic processing chains, but it is not known how the user can interact with this automatic processing chain. So you eliminated the user there where you don't need him in the stupid work, and just do this proxy stuff of getting data from one server and entering it into the other server. But yeah, XML is not a human-centered interface. So there are different solutions to this problem. You can provide your web service, which accepts XML data, and parallel to it, write a web application, which provides an HTML interface, and then converts this into a request to the web service. But it's very expensive. You have to write two applications. And this is where XForms comes into or enters the scene. And I just want to show you a little bit about that. So what I do now is I start my vacation web service. And so what you simply have to do now is write this XML document, send it to the server, wait for the request. And when you use XForms, it's very easy. You can just you can just download a formula for it. I will show you how you can generate it. So this is a simple XForms formula. And now I can make a request simply like that. I will say when I want to go to vacation. And then you just hit this vacation request button. It will access the web service, wait for the answer, and the answer is a new document, and it just said, okay, the request registered was this one. So here you see the XML document back. And it's very, very easy to generate such a formula. And this is, there's one standard, it's called XForms. It's a W3C standard, and it is completely embodied within the style of the writer. And what you can do is you can insert your controls. Sorry, just have to leave the design mode. So you can insert new controls, insert button, all this stuff. And when you can bind these buttons to XML data, and you can bind these buttons to XML data. I will not go into detail here, but there's a very good introduction on Erwin's blog, and you can see it. Yes. Sorry? Okay, I will show that. You have this submit button, and it's bound to the request submission, and it's this submission, and here it is said that you access this web service, so I have my vacation request servlet, using the post method. You can also use the put method or the get method. The binding expression tells you which data to submit, and this is XSLT, so you see it's a live update. If I say here vacation request, and if I not misspelled it, and then say name, it only will send the name to the web server. So it's a very, very powerful tool. Yes? No, it is not. Yes, I don't know this details feature baseline, but I am sure it is planned. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. SOAP is it is more sophisticated, to put it very simple. You have, for example, additionally error messages. So if your web service throws an exception, you have a SOAP expression which can say, okay, there was an exception thrown and this happened. SOAP is also very powerful. You have document encoding, you have RPC encoding, and the best way to start is there's one agreement about a minimal set of features which every web service should talk, and it's this WS1 specification from the W3C, and it usually says web service should be talk, HTTP, and SOAP. You can use this get encoding, and you will just have your normal messages and encode it as name equals then, for example, Reuter, and then this pound sign and the next one. It will work. You can. So by the way, oh yeah, sorry. You can configure it here. This is this switch. You have three options: to ignore the answer of the web service. This is when you choose none. You can use the answer from a web service as a new instance in this XForms model. So this basically means your form will change. And the third option is what I used here, is document. So the web server sends back a document, and then the document will be displayed. And this is what I did here. The web server sends back a document. Then it will be displayed. Yeah. Okay. I think this is very important to mention this XForms, and it will have a huge impact on the way we will build service-oriented architectures and on the way we will interact with a service-oriented architecture. And I think this perfectly fits in this what Tim Bray said, was we need to focus on integration and collaboration. And with this feature, it's specified in the open document, it's implemented in OpenOffice. It is possible to make OpenOffice the natural interface to a service-oriented architecture. Yeah. Okay. Yes. It's a new feature. It will improve. We started with documenting it, and perhaps you see it. I'm not using the OpenOffice beta 2 here. I use a special build which fixes some bugs, which makes this possible. But it will be. We are working on it. Yeah. we are working on it. And so please do not get bothered when you leave this talk and try it and there's some bug. Just submit the bug. Please submit bugs so that we can improve that. And we will improve that. We will not stop here. We will continue working on it. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, I think you talk about this repeating section feature, and it's currently missing, and we're trying hard to implement it. So it's very important to have it, and we know that, and we are working on it. So it is some kind of very hot technology. So this XForms working group is not finished; they are still working on it. So what we had to do is working with the specification, working in this group, get an idea of how to implement it in OpenOffice, and yeah, then try to figure out how it best works, what is the best practice, and yeah, we have not finished with it, and yeah, perhaps we can get feedback from you, and yeah, but please use it. It's the right technology to communicate with service-oriented architectures. Yes. Are there any questions? Any other questions? I have a few slides about some further ideas, so perhaps we can use the last 5 minutes to talk about that. It's one thing I call red line visualized validation. So one problem is when you recall this forest filter, you write your data, you use special features of OpenOffice which cannot be exported into this content XML of Forest. So there are two reasons. The first reason is simply your filter script is insufficient, so you have to improve it. And the second thing is it can't be mapped, simply. So you, for example, put in some XForms controls or something like that, which is not exportable into this source target format. So there are two ideas of dealing with this thing. The first idea is limiting the GUI, masking everything out which cannot be exported. This is not easy to do. So you have to edit all this XML configuration files, and you don't want that. So the idea is, which I want to discuss with you, is the following. Consider, for example, I will make it more visually. So consider, for example, you cannot handle bold text. So you type text, and you have a bold in there, and you say it's bold. And your export script cannot handle bold scripts. And what I want is that you, when you save the document, you get feedback that you can't handle this kind of content, and it can be very easily made using the change tracking mechanism. So when you do changes on, replace this bold thing, this is what you get after saving. So you get feedback from the export script, and you can see it here in the changes. You can see what happens, and it says the format is changed of it. So when you look at it, it's some kind of interaction with a computer on a way you would do with another human. So if I would send it to someone of you and you said, okay, no, it should not be bold, then you would use the change tracking mechanism and say, no, I changed it back. So this is what a script, what a computer can do also. And this is not implemented. This is just an idea. So so the idea is, how can you do it? And the thing is, the first you have to do is you have to replace the export, the simple export feature, with a cycle. You have to do an export, then validate it, so try to figure out if there is anything which you can't handle, and then import it back again with redlining applied to it. But this can be done. You can use the API and write a script which does this. And the second thing is, how can you easily provide this redline information content? And so the idea is to use a regular tree grammars, like, for example, W3 schema or RelaxNG schema. And you provide a schema which describes a subset of OpenOffice, and you validate it, and everything which is not valid will be redlined. And so you have a mechanism of very easily making it visual what your script can do, what your script can't do, and because it's validated, you can be sure that your XSLT script will get the right information. And this can be done. This. So are there any comments on that? Yeah, this is also a nice idea. Yes. Yes. About metadata?
Well, we have the metadata already for all of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is also an interesting idea. And if you like, you can write us a feature request for it and submit it to OpenOffice. the thing is, redlining is very complicated to implement. It's some of the hard parts of OpenOffice, of the core. So it's not so easy. Yes, behind there.
Yeah.
Okay, this is something which regard the user interface. You're right. So what I would propose is to use this basic technology of redlining, because I think it's the same, and then just provide another user dialogue or something like that to visualize this data. But if I understood you correctly, you want to do the same thing. You want to track what you cannot export and then provide it. And the other thing is forbidding to export if it's not correct. Yes, I don't know how the user will be satisfied with this. If your computer says no, I won't save it. So maybe you won't do it. I don't know. Yes. Okay, you currently have this this web DAF support, which is not what you mean. Okay, Kai. And the other thing is what you mentioned, this layouting. So what you want to do on the server side is have your open document layouted. So what we saw here is this content file was used to generate a PDF. So it could also be an open document layouted to a to PDF. Okay. Yes, this is also where I agree with Tim Bray, and I think that he named it as dynamically content. You don't no longer want to have static documents, you want dynamic documents, you want them to change whenever your business logic says that it changed. And yes, I think that we have to think about how OpenOffice can be implemented in a client-server architecture. How OpenOffice is the client, and you need some kind of counterpart.
What we do at the moment is we just take the document and we unzip it in the business logic, and we parse it and we put it in construct. It, but it's not the way that I want to do it, because there are issues with compatibility with the metadata and so on.
Do you want to comment on that? Okay, sorry. Yes, so the same is you can fill out X forms in Mozilla and in OpenOffice. But what OpenOffice is more is OpenOffice, the difference between the browser and OpenOffice, I think, is that the browser is just a viewer. It has very limited input capabilities. And OpenOffice, on the other hand, is a tool where you can create content. And this is the same in with OpenOffice. You can fill out the forms, but you also can design the forms. You can create the forms. And this you cannot do with Mozilla. Okay. Yeah. Yes, you're right. You can always build applications, but it's not the user. Yeah. So I think that users will be more skilled with web services. There will be power users which will not use C++ or some programming languages, but which can handle X Forms and OpenOffice. I truly believe that. Yes? Yeah. So yeah, this is one of the reasons I mentioned it here. Just wanted to have a discussion with you of whether this is okay, this kind of feedback is okay, or you prefer another way of feedback. So basically, yes. Yeah, that's right. So to be fully operable, you have to improve redlining, yes. But I don't know exactly if there's a discussion about that. I'm not aware. You're talking about the XHTML filter? You talk about the XHTML filter? And Svante has to say something about it. I don't know much about that filter. But he's the man. So, any questions? Or perhaps we can meet afterwards. We've gone over time. I would like to thank you for listening to me. And yeah, it's great to be here.